Last Handful of Clover, a novel by Wes Mongo Jolly, read by the author. Book 2, Gifts Both Light and Dark. Chapter 23, Here We Persist. June 13th, 4:53 a.m. As the stars began to wink out above the Wasatch, Richard felt like his mind was so full of new information and so emotionally battered by the things he had seen that he needed to rest and just sit silently, at least for a while.
"I haven't felt this tired since I came back," Richard said. "I just want to clear my head for a few minutes. Can we sit somewhere?"
"You aren't physically tired," Billy said. "Fatigue is just an illusion that we sometimes hold on to from our old lives. You can let that go."
"Fine. I'm not physically tired. But if I try to think about this stuff anymore, I think my nerves are going to snap."
"We don't have much further to go. There's only one thing left I need to show you."
"And then what?"
Billy didn't answer. He just walked on, and Richard obediently followed.
"I'll do what he says," Richard thought. "At least for now."
He could see the ridge of the mountains towering above him now as the sky broke from black to gray, but the roads were still mostly devoid of cars. They walked down 21st East through the last of the pre-dawn hours, and Richard followed as Billy led them across the Bonneville Golf Course and toward the foothills. Soon the sky had brightened and turned a soft shade of robin's egg blue, waiting for the sun to spill over the crest of the Wasatch. And with the cool morning air and the coming of dawn, Richard felt like he had taken a tonic that had cleared his mind of the horrors and the wonders that Billy had showed him overnight. Eventually, their walk took them up Emigration Canyon Road, passing Hogle Zoo on their right. Just past the zoo's parking lot, Billy took a sudden left onto a dirt path with a sign labeled Bonneville Shore Trail. Less than 50 yards off the main road, Billy stepped off the trail and found a spot of scrub oak and broken rocks, where he stopped, looking out over the valley. It was a beautiful spot, Richard had to admit, with an excellent view of the city below and the hillside above. The sun was still not up, but golden light had now kissed the ochre mountains across the valley. The city itself remained in shadow, the streetlights blinking out and lights coming on in houses, apartments, and office buildings as the city came to life. It would still be at least 2 hours until the sun had climbed high enough in the sky to reach them at the base of the mountains. Billy and Richard sat at the base of a scrub oak, and they watched in silence as the city slowly came to life. "Why here?" Richard asked, finally breaking the silence. "You could have found a more comfortable spot for us to sit." "But isn't the view from here wonderful?" Billy asked. "Imagine what it was like more than a century ago. The foothills were still unsettled, and Salt Lake City was only a collection of ramshackle buildings and tents down below. You could look from here all the way across to the Ochre Mountains, and the air was crystal clear."
"No more inversions, huh?" Richard smirked. "That would be a relief."
He eased back on his elbows, and perhaps it was because his mind was so full and tired that he actually found the hard ground comfortable. He tipped back his head. Above them, the sky was full of wispy clouds, looking as fine as dragonfly wings. The morning mist still hung in the air, and the sound of the sparse traffic in the distance faded away. As he stared into the sky, Richard thought he could actually hear the sounds of the animals in the nearby zoo. Like so many others in this valley, they were just starting their day as well.
"They too have their jobs to do," he mused. "They too are stuck in a fucking cage."
It could have been a half hour, or even an hour later before he spoke again. Without even looking, he could see Billy to his left, sitting cross-legged in the dirt like a Hindu holy man.
It's like trying to learn a new language, a new culture, and a new set of physical laws all at once, Richard said.
Well, Richard, you're a linguist. Maybe that makes you better able to make sense of it than most, Billy said thoughtfully.
Maybe you can think of it as if you're an explorer, discovering a new tribe.
Richard closed his eyes and just concentrated on the breeze.
I'm a linguist, not an anthropologist.
But I always wanted to learn Navajo. I just never found the time.
Maybe you'll have the time after all this is over.
Not if your wanderer has his way. It doesn't sound like there'll be much of anything left after he's done.
The mountains loomed above them, now even more dark and silhouetted in contrast to the glow of the brilliant blue sky.
Richard felt as if he was on the liminal edge of something, and despite the beauty, everything he had seen overnight had left him with a lack of hope and a profound sense of futility.
This valley is nothing but a big, heaping bowl full of pain and despair, Richard said. It's like a temperature inversion of the soul. And I'd give anything to walk up those mountains right now and get above it.
Where would you go?
I don't know. The monastery, maybe. Somewhere quiet.
Maybe a temple in India.
At least I'd know the language.
Billy snickered and sounded for a moment very much like the boy he appeared to be.
Seems an odd retirement home for an atheist, he said.
Richard turned on his side and looked at the boy who was contemplating the toes on his bare foot.
Why did you bring me here?
Because I knew that after all I had told you, leaving the city would be on your mind.
The hereafter itself seems like the last mystery I haven't yet explained to you.
The last? Richard said with a hoarse laugh.
Well, let's just say the biggest.
Billy rose slowly to his feet and looked up the hillside. I know where all the boundaries of the hereafter are. We're very close here. I've tested them all over the years.
Richard remembered. You said you died in Immigration Canyon. Was it near here?
Yes. In fact, you're lying right on the spot that I died.
Richard sat up and looked at the spot where he lay. He expected to see some sign of Billy's passing, but he could see nothing below him but sand, broken rock, and an occasional red ant that was making its way across the moonscape.
There were many years where I cursed my parents for rushing me to Salt Lake City after I was injured, Billy said, gazing up the hillside. If they had stopped the wagon just a few dozen yards further up the trail, I wouldn't have died in the hereafter.
I was angry for a lot of years once I understood how close I had come to escaping all this, that I had missed heaven by just a handful of steps.
Richard looked up the hillside in the direction of Billy's unfocused gaze. He couldn't see anything that would indicate he was close to the edge of anything.
The light didn't appear to shimmer, and there was no veil hanging in the air.
And yet, now that he was looking, he knew exactly where the edge of the hereafter was.
He felt Billy's eyes on him.
Can you sense it, Richard?
I think I can. It feels like... No, it sounds like a hum. I can almost feel the vibrations on my face when I look at it.
I always thought it sounded like the buzz of an electric fence or a high-tension power line. But I think it may be a little different for each of us. However you perceive it, I think it is a warning signal that keeps us back.
Like those invisible fences that keep dogs in the yard. The ones that shock their collars if they ignore the buzzing.
Yes, except for us, it isn't a shock. It's a reset,
and it's far more painful.
Billy reached down and took Richard's hand. He helped him to his feet.
"You might want to step a few feet to your right," he said, and then turned and walked up the hillside toward that hum that Richard could feel on his face. As Billy got closer, Richard felt the hum grow more strident, as if it was a hive of buzzing bees warning Billy to stay away. But the boy didn't pay it any heed. He just kept walking right into the undefined spot on the hillside that Richard sensed marked the edge of the hereafter. When he passed that invisible barrier, Billy convulsed once, as if a wave of energy had rolled up from his feet to the crown of his head. He fell to his knees, and with a groan that traveled all the way back to Richard, he pitched forward toward the bushes. But he never arrived. In an instant, as Richard watched, Billy was disassembled, shattered like a dropped jigsaw puzzle. Richard could only momentarily perceive all the constituent parts of the boy coming apart. It wasn't a gory sight, more like an image on a pane of glass that was suddenly shattered, fell to the ground, and disappeared. For 3 seconds, everything was still. But then the air folded in upon itself just to Richard's left, in the very spot where he had been lying moments before. Startled, he stepped further back and watched in wonder as the shards of Billy materialized in the thin air and fell together like a million magnets drawn to a single source. It was almost instantaneous, but Richard saw enough to be lost in the wonder of it. The clockwork of the universe was absurdly dripping with magic and mystery in that moment, and he knew that if he wasn't seeing the handiwork of Billy's God, he was certainly seeing the forces of order and chaos engaging in their continual battle for supremacy. The last part of the boy that returned was his breath, which he sucked in so violently that Richard thought he might have been emerging from deep in the ocean. The look of agony on his face shattered his body anew, and the breath he took came out as a long, low, painful moan that was as much despair as physical pain. It didn't take long for Billy to recover. He had obviously experienced this process more times than Richard could count. But even with that experience, it was still a trip into a world that was difficult for the boy to shake off. Eventually, Billy sat up, and the trembling passed. Richard sank to his knees next to him and put a hand on the boy's shoulder. "I see it now. When you're reset, you travel back through the void. I remember the terror of that place. I could see it on your face." To his surprise, Billy looked at him with confusion.
"The void?" The boy's voice was shaky as he tried to control his ragged breathing. "Yeah, the place where I was at after I died, before I came back here. That's what I've been calling it. I guess I was there for the 3 days you talked about. It was horrible."
Billy looked thoughtful and took a moment to sit up, flexing his shaking hands. "What you are calling the void is what I have always called the vastness. To me, it isn't a place of horror or fear. Was it that for you?"
"Like nothing I can tell you," Richard said, feeling confused. "It felt like I was being surgically stripped of everyone and everything I'd ever known. Every memory, every emotion, everything that made me who I am. It was brutal and violent and terrifying. I would have done anything to escape it."
Billy's breath had returned to normal, and there was a strange smile at the corners of his mouth as he leaned back on his elbows in the dirt. "For me, death was nothing like that. I call where I went the vastness, because it seemed as if it went on forever. It was huge and intimidating, to be sure, and in some ways it made me feel inadequate and small. But it was also glorious and luminous beyond compare. The vastness was like being bathed in sunlight and seeing all at once that the sun loves you and that you are the sun itself. In the vastness, you realize that there is no real boundary between yourself and the rest of the universe. It feels like you're staring into the mind of God and getting back nothing but love.
But what I saw in your face just now wasn't love. It was terror. You didn't look like you were blissing out on the face of God.
Yes, but the pain and the terror of a reset always comes from being ripped away from the vastness, being pulled violently away from what I had been searching for my entire life. Richard, to me, the vastness isn't a place of terror. It is the goal. It's the gate of heaven. It's the place that myself and most ghosts are yearning for. Our search is mostly in vain, and only in those brief moments of being reset do we glimpse the face of God. But those resets serve as a reminder that there is an order to the universe, and there is meaning and a purpose for what we are going through here in the hereafter.
If that's true, then why don't ghosts spend their days resetting themselves over and over again?
Some do, like Maddie did for a time. But for most of us, the pain of seeing God's face and then having it ripped away is more painful than not seeing it at all. Like me, many of the ghosts, at least the ones who remain sane, will only reset themselves when they need a reminder that this is not the end. Richard was confused, but an extremely dark thought crossed his mind.
So you're telling me that when I died, I saw a vision of hell, and you saw a vision of heaven?
Richard, I don't think it's that simple. Those are just symbols, just ideas.
Am I really that despicable of a person? I think you're telling me that I'm damned.
Billy's face looked pained. No, I'm not saying that at all. He took a long breath. Richard, I actually don't think you and I experience anything different when we enter the vastness, or the void, as you call it. We both experience the exact same thing. Dying is the loss of our individuality in favor of a universal oneness with all creation.
Richard just glared at him, but Billy went on.
I think I see that dissolution as heaven, while you see it as hell.
Richard's jaw worked as if he was grinding a piece of gristle between his teeth. Finally, he thumped his finger hard into the boy's chest. That's bullshit, Billy. Feel-good, new-age bullshit.
The boy squared his shoulders and looked hard into Richard's eyes. What is it about death that terrifies you so much, Richard Pratt?
Richard climbed to his feet, feeling exhausted. How could he explain to this boy what death meant for him? What it had always meant for him? Billy, death doesn't terrify me, but I dread it. It is, I guess it's because death is the ultimate loss.
Yes, it is, Billy agreed, trying to understand the trembling he saw in the man. But we all know loss, my friend. It's part of the human condition. People we care about die. Relationships end. Children grow up and move away. We lose possessions and illusions and dreams. Our bodies fail us. Even our minds are prey to diseases like Alzheimer's. It all dwindles away, Richard. Everything. And it all disappears. Loss is endemic to the human condition.
I know all that, but death is different.
How is it different?
I don't know. Maybe because it's so complete and so inevitable. It's different because it's mythic, existential. Deep inside, we all know it's coming for us and that the scale of it will be beyond anything we can imagine. We might live with loss every day of our lives, but death is different. Death is the ultimate loss, and it makes all the others nothing in comparison. Death is the deepest unknown. It isn't just losing what we have and who we know. It's losing ourselves.
Billy spread his hands wide. And yet, here we are. Here we persist.
But don't you see? That makes it worse. I had always consoled myself by believing that death was like a light switch. Once it was flipped, you might lose everything, but part of that everything would be your sense of self. What I never counted on was the idea that I would lose everything, but that through some fucking glitch, I would survive to witness and be tortured by that loss. That I'd have to be torn apart by that loss forever. So if you're asking why the void terrifies me, it's because of that. What if that place is truly nothing but the awareness of loss forever and inescapable? That's what I felt those 3 days in the void.
So why was my experience of it so different? Why was it not that for me?
I don't know, Richard shouted, and then sat back down in the dirt with his face in his hands.
Maybe people can only survive by telling themselves stories about death that make the prospect of it easier to bear. Maybe we need to replace that terror with meaning. So everyone comes up with a fairy tale they can live with. For some people, that fairy tale may be heaven. For others, it's reincarnation. For me, it was the idea that death was just oblivion and the end of existence.
But we have to come up with some lie to tell ourselves. If we didn't have some thin wafer of hope that it isn't all just meaningless, then we'd all go insane.
You believe paradise is waiting. Buddhists believe that we'll all come back. But my best hope was always that it would just be the end and emptiness. No thoughts, no pain. I was counting on total loss, but also the loss of suffering.
But it hasn't ended up that way.
Oh, God.
No, not at all.
Billy stared hard at the man who sat in the dust at his feet, staring at the dirt.
I think I understand you, Richard Pratt. But it breaks my heart that you died, yearning for annihilation.
Richard sighed and spread out his arms.
And yet, here I am, persisting, as you say. If your fucking God exists, then he's left me with all the pain and the loss and none of the hope.
He looked at Billy, and his eyes held such anger that Billy was speechless for a moment.
Tell your God, thanks for fucking nothing.
Billy knelt and placed a hand on Richard's knee.
Richard, please understand. What you're experiencing is based on your own assumptions, your own fears and terrors. It doesn't have to be the way you perceive it. You can change how you see it and experience it. Re-entering that stream and passing on to heaven is what every ghost I have ever met longs for. It's the fulfillment of our interrupted destinies. It's the rumored sixth gift. What is so different about you, Richard, that unlike every other ghost that I have ever met, only you find that prospect so horrific?
I wish I knew, Richard said quietly.
Both of the ghosts were silent for a moment. Richard felt he needed to know more, but he was afraid to ask. Finally, he said,
"You called re-entering that stream the sixth gift. Don't you think it's time you explained what the fuck these gifts are?"
"I'll explain it to you," Billy said. "Let's walk to the monument. We can sit there and talk."
You're listening to The Last Handful of Clover, a novel by Wes Mongo Jolly. If you're enjoying this audiobook, please consider supporting the author on Patreon. That's patreon.com/WesMongoJolly. And for more information, check out the author's website at wesmongojolly.com. That's WESSMONGOJOLLEY.com. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for more episodes.